How's it going, everybody? Brian Alvarez here on Wrestling Observer Live. We're here for the next 2 hours talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. A packed week of wrestling news in both pro wrestling and MMA, as it always is. We'll also talk last night's Mayweather-Mosley fight. I didn't get a chance to see it, but our co-host Mike Sempervivi checked it out. We'll talk to you about that, and then it's on to pro wrestling and MMA news. We'll talk last week's Extreme Rules pay-per-view, which was followed by a three-hour draft Raw. A bunch of guys going from Raw to SmackDown, supposedly permanently, but I think everybody knows how that goes. And in fact, half of the Raw guys were on SmackDown this week. Although, we will talk about that show. They did do a good job writing these guys out of the storyline and having them do jobs on the way out. We'll talk about that. The supplemental draft as well. All of the TV this past week. The NXT show, Ultimate Fighter, and SmackDown. Talk about the end of Jim Ross as a talent in WWE. What his future holds. What he's still doing with the company. And what some of his other thoughts are about things to do in this business. Quentin Jackson versus Rashad Evans is coming up in just a few weeks. This is going to be a big pay-per-view, and we'll tell you why, talk about some of the backstory to that fight and what is going on there. TNA did its lowest rating of all time on Spike TV this past Monday night. Lowest rating of all time. Tell you about that rating, the response within TNA. We'll talk about the WWE Raw rating as well and what that means. Plus, the TNA replay numbers from Thursday, the story that tells, and the future of TNA on Spike TV on Monday nights. Tito Ortiz, Jenna Jameson, marital problems. We'll talk about those. The initial police report, what both parties said when the deal first went down, and what both parties said a couple of days later. We'll talk about the future of Batista. He may be finishing up with WWE, although he's going to stay around a little bit longer than we talked about last week. Talk about a TNA star who has quit the company, and a lot more. We're going to take your phone calls and emails as well. Talk all of the news in pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. As noted, Mike Sempervivi, our co-host here. And Mike, we got a lot of news to talk about, and we're going to cover it here after the break. Of course, you're listening to Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Radio Network. God. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com, here for the next 2 hours, talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts, and yes, we are kicking it off today by talking some boxing. Mike, the Floyd Mayweather, the Mosley fight last night. Your thoughts on it?
Well, you didn't miss a thing, although I hope for your sake you had a chance to watch the 24/7s leading up to it, because they, as always, were very, very good. And in fact, the HBO last week, the 9 sports Emmys they picked up, 5 of them were for their 24/7 series, 4 of which had to do with boxing. Yeah, really. And one for NASCAR, but, you know, 3 different episodes were spread out over those 4 awards, which shows you how consistent, how good these things are, and, you know, how much better they make them each and every time out, as long as the subjects are there. And, you know, this was a good one this time, and I'm not sure if they built up Shane Mosley more than, you know, than anybody else or anything like that. I think hardcore boxing fans are going to watch this. There's going to be casual interest from sports fans that remember Shane from the late 90s and early 2000s, the fight went pretty much exactly like everybody thought it would. Mayweather won on my scorecard, 11 rounds to 1. I think the best he did on anybody else's on the official judges' scorecard was maybe having 2 rounds. But outside of one shot, he perfectly timed a straight right hand to Mayweather in the second round that blasted him. He held onto his arm, and Floyd smiled at him, but it was obvious that his legs were a little bit out from under him. And then just a little while later, he landed a right to the temple that almost knocked Floyd down again. And he was able to hold on and stay up in the round. But that was the only round Mosley had all night. And not a disappointing performance for I guess it was for Mosley. But realistically, it just shows how good Floyd Mayweather is. And it also shows that the only fight out there for both Floyd Mayweather and Manny Pacquiao is each other. And realistically, they have almost little to prove. Pacquiao could probably go up and be one of the belt holders at 154. But realistically, these guys have kind of maxed out without getting themselves into too much trouble weight-wise. So unless they fight each other, after having another fight or so, they might as well go away, because the public's going to start to turn on them if they stay in the game fighting guys who they're obviously dominating and making paydays for, but the other guy is still out there waiting.
I read one thing that said the second round may have been the toughest round of Mayweather's entire career.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if nothing else, it was the toughest since the first Marquez fight. You know, that some people arguably had him losing, but I didn't. He had won that fight, but this was by far his toughest fight since. But realistically, it was only one round. I mean, he talked about not getting caught in Mayweather's trap, and that's exactly what he did. It was almost like he was just completely fried by the middle of the fight. He just seized up and he just walked right into Mayweather's plan, including late in the fight, running his mouth, talking to Mayweather as Mayweather landed a 1-2 across his face. So, I mean, if Mayweather once again comes out of this as a great heel, he did kind of a heel promo afterwards by just saying, you know, what he believes, which is there will be no fight with Pacquiao unless he does the blood testing.
I love that that's a heel move. You know what I mean? It's ridiculous. I mean, you shouldn't take that fight unless the guy agrees to it. I mean, him and Mosley did the blood testing all the way up to the fight, correct?
Yes, they did. And in fact, in the last 24/7 episode, the guy from the committee who had been testing, because they showed up to Mosley right as he was getting into his car to leave to go to Las Vegas, they ran up on him, and he's been cutting weight, so he's very dry anyway. But they rolled up on him there, and he, you know, gave credit to both fighters. Obviously, Mayweather is going to do that, but they gave credit to both fighters for how important it was that they're doing this, and how if this is done throughout all of sports, we wouldn't have a problem worrying about any performance-enhancing drugs.
Well, for the most part. I mean, there are always going to be guys that are one step ahead of everybody else, but for the most part, you're right. And I don't know, it's just, we've been talking about this for months and months and months, but I mean, for God's sake, I mean, you know, Mayweather and Mosley had no problem with this, so what's Pacquiao's problem here? I mean,
well,
it's certainly,
and, you know,
all
and
this...
Mayweather, did he do it for the most honorable of reasons, which is, I don't want there to be performance-enhancing drugs in sports, or did he do it to tweak Pacquiao? I think he did it more to tweak Pacquiao, but regardless, at this point, the way it's gotten to, and after seeing Pacquiao and Clotty with what I still believe to be ridiculously inflated pay-per-view numbers, even though they did a great job with attendance at Cowboys Stadium, and seeing Mayweather dominate Mosley, which was one of his only other pieces of competition that's still out there that would give him a good fight. I mean, you know, because of those two guys being out there, more public pressure is going to be put on Pacquiao, and really, you know, it's fairly so. Because for a fight of this magnitude, you know, if you're going to, you have to help boxing too. And this is the only big fight out there for boxing. It's a huge money fight for everybody involved, from the sponsors to pay-per-view to everybody else. So by not doing this fight, I mean, the public in hindsight is really going to start to turn on Pacquiao. And frankly, he should just do it anyway if he's got nothing to worry about, because his legacy is so incredibly strong. Whereas if he goes through with this, win or lose, he's still going to be looked at because of the way he's gone up in weight, as one of the greatest fighters of all time because of what he's been able to do. So to not tarnish that, if he's got nothing to hide, you might as well go ahead and do it and make a hell of a lot of money before something stupid happens and you don't make anything.
How was Mayweather in round 12?
He was Mayweather. Now, he was doing a good job. I mean, look, he said he was looking for the knockout. You know, it's not like he was throwing Korean zombie type of reckless abandon out there, but he was, you know, doing some chopping away. He wasn't going for the knockout the way he said he was, but he was being aggressive, and he didn't just lay back and get on his bicycle and go backwards.
But, I mean, he wasn't gassed or anything like that.
Oh, Jesus Christ, no. I mean, Floyd Mayweather can't get gassed.
The reason I ask is because, I mean, if all of this blood drawing was such a detriment to these men as they're getting ready for a fight, seems odd that he would be fresh as a daisy in that 12th round.
Well, Floyd Mayweather also knows he could do it. And here's one of the other things, because he brought it up after the fight, too. But Nassim Richardson, who is Shane Mosley's trainer, you know, they said it during the 24/7 episode that every time Roger Mayweather or Floyd Mayweather, because Floyd really played it up in episode one, every time they brought up the fact that he Mosley used performance-enhancing drugs with the Balco scandal and the fight before Oscar De La Hoya, he brought up the fact that Shane would take, Mayweather would get pain injections into his hands before his fights, which he looked at as it was a performance-enhancing move. You know, Floyd's got very brittle hands. He's always had a problem with breaking his hands during his fights. He hasn't had much of a problem with that recently, but he had a real problem with that earlier in his career. So, you know, he brought that up, too, to throw in Floyd's face. So you could say technically, even though it's not a steroid or something like that or HGH, you could say that Floyd's also used performance-enhancing drugs in fights. So he did bring that up, and, you know, that's something also Pacquiao's side could throw up there, too. But, you know, realistically, with Mayweather barking about it, I mean, again, no matter what mental block Pacquiao has about this, he really needs to just go ahead and do it for the sake of sports, actually, really, too, because it's such a mega, mega event. You know, Richard Schaefer from Golden Boy was talking about this fight.
Well, actually, let me ask very quickly, are pain injections in your hands illegal?
You know, I'd have to go back. I remember the fight was in Michigan, and I'm trying to think of who it was against. I know it was a fight on HBO, and I think this Larry Merchant was being very Larry Merchant when it comes to Floyd Mayweather, very derisive throughout the whole thing. But I'd have to go back and try to find exactly what that fight was and what the rules are in Michigan. I would assume in Vegas, anything like that doesn't fly. I would assume anything like that wouldn't work. But, you know, I don't know, because isn't there – I think for UFC, I mean, don't you even have to declare that you're taking, you know,
I'm talking killers? Well, I'm talking more like, is this a Schedule 3 drug that you're taking here? The answer is probably a no.
No.
I look at it a little bit differently. I mean, obviously, if you're fighting in UFC, I mean, you can't take ephedrine. And I can go down to the Rite Aid down the hill and grab ephedrine right over the counter. So, you know, it's obviously you've got to abide by the rules that the commission is setting forward about what you can and cannot take, but...
And there's the thing for Pacquiao, is that's what he says, is, look, I'm doing what the commission wants me to do. Who are you to call me out and say this? Because, I mean, realistically, even though in this era, as soon as you say something about performance-enhancing drugs on somebody, they're immediately branded with that, and, you know, whether they're innocent or not. If you think about it, he could be completely innocent and just going off morals of, who do you think you are to call me out when I'm the bigger fighter in this? And that's been a battle back and forth over who's the true cash cow in this fight.
Actually, hold that thought. We've got to head to a break. We'll talk about this a little bit more when we come back. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Radio Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live here at Sports Byline USA. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. We are, in fact, talking the Mayweather fight from last night. We'll get into the pro wrestling and MMA in just a second. But, Mike, you were talking more about the potential. I don't even know if potential is the right word. Pacquiao and Mayweather.
Yeah, it's just, you know, the hopefully potential fight. I mean, there's nothing that either one of these guys could do, you know, besides fight each other. And, you know, there's one thing, and I'm not going to defend Manny Pacquiao here too much. You know, I was talking about the fact that, you know, before we went to break, that, again, he's doing everything the commission wants him to do. That's what he's saying. And Mayweather's the one saying that's not good enough. You know, but realistically, you could say that Pacquiao has never taken anything. And because people bring up the fact that he's gone up so many weight divisions, and they brought up the fact that he started at 105 pounds. Manny Pacquiao is from a poor part of the Philippines. His first fight was at 16 years old. He's 31. He's in prime condition. He's been, you know, he eats better than, you know, most people in the world. He gets better training than most people in the world. I mean, he should be at his peak right now. So the jump, he has gained 42 pounds over his career. Sugar Ray Robinson gained 35 at points. James Toney has fluctuated 65. Thomas Hearns has been 43. You know, Iran Barkley, 70. Now, those guys didn't have the type of successes they went up like Pacquiao has, but it's a little bit different situation now, too. So, I mean, Pacquiao needs to come out and at least do that, too, and be a little bit more proactive if he is going to come up with a reason for the public to believe that he shouldn't be taking this test. And he could at least throw that up there. Now, whether it's true or not, I don't know. And in this era, I mean, for all I know, everybody in boxing is on performance-enhancing drugs. You just don't know in this era anymore because it's so easy to get away with and it's so widespread.
So what was he? What was he at 16?
He started his. I think he was 107 for his first fight, which technically would be the strawweight class at 105.
Strawweight. Yeah, when I was when I got my driver's license or my permit, I would have been 15 and a half. I was 115 pounds. And I am significantly, well, I shouldn't say significantly heavier. I'm about 150 right now, but that's not without any performance-enhancing drugs. And for Lord knows, there's no way I could ever get down to 115 again. I just became a larger person as I got older.
Yeah. And again, you know, you're taking somebody who's not, I don't know, about malnourished or anything like that. I don't know about Pacquiao's past to that point of growing up as a child. But, you know, he's in, you know, he's treated like a king in the Philippines. I mean, he trains with Freddie Roach at the Wildcard Gym. I mean, he's at peak condition. And again, he's 31 years old. Yes, he's been there forever, but he's only 31. So when you look at it that way, it's not out of the realm of possibility that Pacquiao, just like Sugar Ray Robinson and all these other guys, has just gone up in weight, period. Like, James Toney, we're talking about James Toney and Randy Couture, maybe him popping up after the Kimbo fight at the pay-per-view. There's a perfect example of a guy that he started his career as a middleweight, 160. He was still competitive because of the way the heavyweight class is right now at 220 pounds. Now, he was a fat lump, but because of the heavyweight class, he was still technically a contender. Chris Bird, who competed for the heavyweight title, I think maybe one of Chunk at one point, he was a Olympian middleweight, which I think is about 158 pounds or 156 or something like that. He competed in his career heavyweight and did it in a shorter time span of to get up to that weight. So, you know, again, this is one of the possible reasons, but realistically, at the end of the day, even though Richard Schaefer said the Golden Boy, you know, from Golden Boy said this fight with Mosley and Mayweather could do upwards of $4 million, and he's on drugs.
$4 million?
Yeah, he's a moron if he even believes that statement. He's turning into Bob Arum more and more with predictions like that. I mean, I thought I was going to do 1-1 a couple months ago. I'm thinking 1-5-2 right now, but definitely not over 2. I'd be shocked. And until somebody does it without the name Oscar De La Hoya in there, you can't say it's going to happen. Even Mayweather, with the exception of Mayweather and Pacquiao, could be the only thing that beats it. But, I mean, that Mayweather-Pacquiao fight could legitimately do 3.5 million buys, I would assume. You know, and all the promotion and everything that will go into that with late night TV. I mean, this is a Hagler Hearns, a Tyson in the 80s type of, you know, big time.
Well, still, none of those.
We have mass up that's great for the general public.
None of those hit 3, though. I mean, none of those, you know, 2.4 is still the record. And I don't know. I'll say this. I know that people are going to hear this and think, you know, Brian, you're an idiot. But generally, I can get a pretty good feel on what a buy rate is going to be by my own interest level and the interest level of a lot of my friends. And there were a couple of Tyson fights in the 80s that I ended up buying. And I'm not a boxing fan, really. There were a couple of Tyson fights in the 80s that I bought. And if you go back and you look at the all-time pay-per-view buy rate records, I mean, those were some of those fights, the ones that I bought. The Mayweather-De La Hoya fight, I mean, I watched 24/7. I bought it. I mean, I had not bought a boxing pay-per-view in over a decade. I bought that fight. This one here, I watched a little bit at 24/7. I watched maybe an episode and a half total. They were all playing in a row on, I think it was Friday night, and I was watching some of them before going to bed. And I didn't get into it quite enough to buy this show. And to me, but I was intrigued. So, and I would guess 1.5 for this particular pay-per-view. I think anyone saying 4 is like completely out of their minds. But, I mean, you know, Mayweather and Pacquiao, I mean, without even seeing any 24/7, I'd buy that show. And I know some other friends who have done the same thing. So that's one that I can see doing above 2. If you've got me to buy a boxing pay-per-view, that's going to do a really, really big number. And the reason I bring that up is because it's a segue into the next thing we're going to talk about here, which is Quentin Jackson and Rashad Evans. This show, easy 1 million buys. Easy 1 million buys. I watched the Ultimate Fighter, and this was, by the way, a horrendous episode of Ultimate Fighter. I hated the show. I hated the show. I hated the fight. But they had a commercial for Rashad versus Quentin, and I watched this thing and was just like, my God, this fight is going to be big. And I was sitting with my buddy Vince, and he's going to Vegas. And the commercial We were skipping through the commercials, and I saw a flash of it, so I was like, okay, we got to go back and watch this commercial because I heard it was good. And as we're flipping back, Vinny's like, do you have tickets for that yet? And I said, no, not yet. And he said, oh, man, there's nothing left but the 200 seats, and there's no way I'm paying $200. So he says that. We skip back. I watch this commercial. He stops when it's over. He looks at me, and he goes, regardless of what I just said, I am buying a ticket for the show. There's no way I'm missing this fight. And I picture everybody watching this saying the same thing sitting at home. This pay-per-view is going to be big.
Oh, God, yeah. I was going to buy it anyway, and I didn't see the Ultimate Fighter this week, although I heard your show about it, so I'm kind of happy I missed it. But I saw it up on YouTube, and I watched it like 3 times in a row. It's just the way it starts, get on my face, dude. Perfect. The thing was perfect. I mean, these guys were made to fight each other anyway, and that's why I wasn't overly concerned with Rampage going off to do the movie, because you have so much from them from that show and just their general dislike for each other that it doesn't matter. You could build up that fight at any time, and, I hope it's just a incredible fight because, frankly, I'm already looking forward to having a second fight already just because I the way they're going to hype this up and the mouth that Rampage has and the way Evans gets under his skin, the way they're going to play this up in the lead-up, it's going to be absolutely fantastic.
Yeah, it's coming up at the end of May, and apparently, I mean, there's a UFC event coming up this Saturday, and I think the last countdown show was actually several days ago. They're not even doing a countdown show the week of. I could be wrong, but I'm pretty sure they're not doing a countdown show this week because they're already starting the hype for Rampage versus Rashad. Now, keep in mind, I mean, as much as I already want to see this pay-per-view, it's 3 weeks away, and they're doing 3 weeks of the UFC version of 24/7. They're going to follow Quentin around. They're going to follow Rashad around. And, I mean, I don't know. I've seen this happen in WWE and TNA, where there will be a pay-per-view that sounds like it's going to be really big, and then they spend 3 weeks building it up on TV, and by the time the show comes, you could not possibly care less about it. I can't imagine that happening with this particular fight. I mean, these guys are so good. They're just so great at being themselves that, I don't know. I mean, 3 weeks of television hyping up this fight, I don't want to say that this is going to do the biggest buy rate of all time. I'm not going to say anything yet because I'm going to want to watch all three first. But, I mean, this could be way up there. This could be way up there.
Well, and that's the biggest thing is, okay, maybe it doesn't beat UFC 100, but it hovers probably close to near there just because, somebody needs to give me a reason that it won't do that. What would be the reason that it doesn't do that? Especially because people are probably realistically going to sacrifice this coming Saturday's pay-per-view in Montreal. And if they're going to skip one, or they're tight on money, they're going to be looking, dead at the end of the month for the Rampage, and because it doesn't really matter what's even on the undercard. And I know they have some good fights set up there, but it doesn't even matter what's on the undercard. People just want to see that fight.
Looking at the schedule for UFC here, what have we got? Let's see. They've got Ultimate Fighter replay on Monday, a Best of Pride. Wednesday, they've got a ton of stuff. UFC Unleashed, two in a row, and then Ultimate Fighter and a Best of Pride premiere. On Friday, we've got nothing. And on Saturday, yep, the final countdown to UFC 113 was, in fact, on Saturday, which is actually really interesting. Really interesting. So anyway, there you go.
It wasn't bad either from what I saw. I didn't get to see the whole thing, but it wasn't bad. And, even though it's a title fight, even though it was such a controversial fight last time, even though I thought Shogun won, outright. Daly and Koscheck, I just hope is really good. And obviously the Kimbo fight, and I do hope there's James Toney participation afterwards. I hope Matt Mitrione, I don't just stand there and let Kimbo hit him because I there's that perverse part of me that just wants to see Kimbo and James Toney on a UFC pay-per-view.
We're actually going to head to a break. We'll talk more about this when we come back. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Radio Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. For the latest news and information on pro wrestling and mixed martial arts, always head to WrestlingObserver.com. Daily news updates. We've got weekly newsletters and, of course, all of the audio you can handle. Head over to WrestlingObserver.com. Scroll down on the left-hand, the right-hand side of the page. There's a list of our latest, I believe, five free radio shows. If you love what you hear every week here on Sports Byline and Sirius Satellite Radio Channel 122, you can head over there, check out the free shows available for download, put them on your iPod or whatever your MP3 player is, iPhone, perhaps your iPad, in fact. And if you like what you hear, consider signing up. We do probably 15 to 20 brand new shows every week. We've got another edition of Wrestling Observer Radio up tonight with myself and Dave Meltzer. Another one up tomorrow after Raw and Impact. We do radio all the time on the website. So check it out, WrestlingObserver.com. Get your fix of MMA and pro wrestling radio. Back to the news. We haven't talked much about pro wrestling yet this show, so let's get into it. The Extreme Rules pay-per-view on Monday was a pretty good show. Some interesting results. Did you get a chance to see that pay-per-view, Mike?
I did not. I actually sacrificed that pay-per-view.
For the Mayweather show.
Well, yeah, didn't get a chance to watch it yet. I have it sitting here next to me. But, yeah, I guess it was a pretty good show, yeah, from what you were saying. So it led into Monday where I was kind of disappointed. But how was Sunday's?
The big stories on the show, Jack Swagger beat Randy Orton for the world title. Match really, it was good. It wasn't great. Randy Orton has not been great in his role as a babyface, and apparently he's still a babyface. And why they didn't move him to SmackDown to be the top babyface there, I have absolutely no idea, unless there are plans to turn him back heel at some point. Although, as we found out, there are now even more heels on Raw, as we'll talk about when we get into the draft. We had Triple H versus Sheamus in a street fight. Triple H was put out of action. He was hit with a pipe before the match, and then after the match, Sheamus continued to beat the crap out of him, and Triple H has taken time off to film, I believe, actually, two movies now. And so he's been besieged by injuries. He's got a bad neck. He's got a bad quad. He's hurting. So he'll be out of the action until probably this summer, and at that point, he will probably return. You never know how these things go, but Sheamus got a big push there. We had the Jericho versus Edge cage match, which Edge ended up winning in a blow-off, which led people to think that one guy was going to Raw, one guy was going to SmackDown. As it turned out, they both ended up on Raw, but the reason they did the blow-off was that Edge ended up turning heel. And whether that means they'll at some point reunite their tag team, which got cut short by Edge's Achilles tendon injury, or whether they'll go their separate ways, who knows. But it did appear that they're leading towards an Edge versus Randy Orton feud, where Edge is the heel and Randy Orton is the babyface. And if that isn't the most backward thing I've ever seen, I don't know what is. And then finally, in the main event, Cena and Batista, last man standing. Very, very good match. I didn't like the finish at all. They put each other through tables. They did all of these big moves. And then the finish was Cena duct taped Dave's feet together around the ring post. And so Dave could not stand up. And since it's last man standing, he lost. I guess it came off a little better on TV than it sounds when I talk about it here. But I thought it was
280-pound man.
Yeah, could not escape duct tape. Yeah, it was stupid. I didn't like it. Jim Ross actually on Monday sent out a tweet about how he hated it. And it's one thing if you like do this on the undercard, you know what I mean? But when you headline a pay-per-view with a last man standing stip match and you do a screwy finish like this, I mean, I can think of a lot of creative finishes for a main event. That doesn't mean they're any good. And this one was like, we paid $44.95 to see them shoot an angle for the next pay-per-view. So I didn't like that, but what can you do? They're building up to the next show, Over the Limit, which apparently is going to be a automobile racing theme of some sort, which I don't know what that means, but we'll find out. It's coming
up.
Will
they have monster trucks on top of Cobo Hall?
We may have it. It is in Detroit. My God, I hadn't thought of that.
Oh, my God.
Maybe Big Show can fall off the building again and come out for the main event covered in water.
Swagger knocks him off, though?
It could be. That's right. It's going to be Jack Swagger and the Big Show for the title. But anyway, this all led to the draft. And before we get into the draft, I just wanted to make a comment. I mentioned this on one of our other shows at WrestlingObserver.com last night. But next year, WrestleMania is in Atlanta. And I've gone to WrestleMania the last several years. I went when they were in Orlando. I went when they were in Houston. I think those are the last two. Maybe there was another one that I went to. But regardless, I'm going to Atlanta, and not a big fan of Orlando. I really was not a big fan of Orlando. And the Citrus Bowl, for God's sake, what a dump. And Houston, I had some problems in Houston as well. It was all right. Actually, you know what? I really did like Phoenix. I really did like Phoenix. I'd forgotten about that, and I just went, so that's kind of sad. But I really did like Phoenix, and I like the University of Phoenix Stadium, which is actually just a completely beautiful building. I wish they'd just do WrestleMania there every year. But anyway, WrestleMania is in Orlando or in Atlanta this coming year, and I just got back from Atlanta, and I have to say, I love Atlanta. I cannot wait to go back. And as I've said before, for any of you listening to this right now that have never been to a WrestleMania in your life, at least once, whether it be Atlanta or whatever the show is going to be in the coming years, you really need to go out there at least one time. And I should say that if you went to WrestleMania in like 1995, that doesn't count. I'm talking like in the last, you know, probably since 2000, 2001, when it really became like, this is the mega show of the year. You really got to go to WrestleMania because they're really, really cool. And Atlanta's a great city, so I'm very excited about that. But the draft Monday, getting back to that, you weren't blown away by it.
You know, just kind of disappointing. I'm one of those geeks. I actually kind of like the draft every year. You know, I don't mind the wacky theme show. So I do like the draft. And I do. Obviously, people listening to this show won't be impressed with the way WWE, you know, they've increased, it is kind of corny and goofy, but they have increased what they do on their website with it and having the countdown and, you know, and somebody there and live picks starting at noon. And they're making it more like kind of playing off the NFL draft and the fervor that surrounds that sort of stuff. But, you know, it just was, I'd say nothing really happened. I mean, SmackDown was good this week because they established all the guys that came over from Raw and put them over. But just Raw was just kind of there. You know, there were going to be no huge surprises or anything like that. I mean, I would have started that show with a little bit more of a bang. But, you know, ended up, I think Kelly was the first pick. And it just was, it was what it was until the end where Edge got the, you know, Edge speared Randy Orton and Batista got the pin, which obviously now guarantees that Batista sticks around for a little while, too. We had talked about that last week of his leaving imminently. But it looks like it's going to be after the next pay-per-view, which is good because whiny, angry Dave is fantastic and has been fantastic ever since he turned heel.
I think the last 4 or 5 months of Dave's career have been the best. He's just been awesome. And I'm very sad that he'll, I can't say he will be, but he's probably going to be wrapping it up around the next pay-per-view. I know that last week before the show, the feeling was he was done either at the pay-per-view or the next night, and he opted to stick around. And keep in mind that dating back well over a year, there have been many, many times where Dave was on the way out, and oh, he ended up sticking around. And Dave's a guy that wants to go to Hollywood. He wants to become an actor. He wants to make it big outside of WWE. And that's all fine and good, and maybe he will someday, but it's always, I don't know, he's making a lot of money. I mean, he's making a lot of money. Millions of dollars a year between merchandise and bonuses and his base pay. I mean, he's making several million dollars a year in WWE. And Dave Bautista spends a lot of money. And, you know, when the checks are coming every other week or however it works in WWE, I mean, when the checks are coming in, I mean, it's easy to go, man, you know, I'm just going to go to Hollywood and make something of myself. But then I think that sometimes people sit down and they just go, okay, well, you know, I got a lot of money in the bank right now, but no checks coming in, except for merchandising checks, which you're going to continue to get. But, you know, the real big money is going to stop. You're going to go to Hollywood. You're just starting out. I mean, there's a reason that people talk about starving actors. I mean, there's no money to be made when you're starting out down in Hollywood. And he's got no projects on the table. He at least had the project with WWE before they pulled it and gave it to Triple H. But, you know, you're facing the reality of, I like to spend a lot of money. My money is going to be severely cut here. and where I'm going, there's going to be no money coming in. And sometimes people make that realization and they decide to stick around just a little bit longer. So we'll see what ends up happening with Dave, but that's certainly his long-term plan, and he's in his early 40s. He's had a lot of injuries. He obviously can't do this forever. So he may be thinking, you know, well, let's get a couple more years out of this. Let's do what I can and make my make as big of money, as much money as possible, and then I'll pursue this. So,
well, the pros on his side are he can always go back with how he looks. I mean, realistically, he can always go back as long as he doesn't get hurt. I mean, with that look. You know, the con being by going over there and doing this, and yeah, I guess you can work to get a SAG card and all that sort of stuff so you get benefits and things like that. What are the odds with his look he's going to be anything other than a Luther Reigns type of fit player who plays a bodyguard or something like that? I mean, you saw how Rock had to change his body. It depends on how serious Batista obviously is about being an actor, if he's just trying to do get some roles and make a little bit of money and just chill out. I mean, I guess it just depends on what his philosophy is of acting is going to be. But, I mean, I figure he's going to have to change a lot. But he seems to be like he'd be typecast into a role, which, again, how long do those roles last for?
And again,
he can always come back. So, I mean, it really doesn't – I don't think ultimately this is going to matter too much.
Yeah, when you look like Dave, I mean – You're a villain or you're a heavy, you know what I mean? It's like
probably a non-speaking one too.
Yeah, you look at like a lot of the real great actors who've had real long careers and played a lot of roles and I don't want to say that they're normal looking people, but they're people that they're able to change the way they look in many many different ways to play many many different roles. And when you're Dave, it's hard to do that. I mean, you can't picture Dave playing your average school teacher, for example, or someone working at a grocery store. I mean, it's I don't know. We'll see what happens with Dave. I mean, maybe
can you imagine being a casting director and you have a role for someone like that, and in walks Batista, Bob Sapp, and the Great Khali?
Let's talk about the Great Khali. He's been drafted, everybody. He's going to Raw. Why? Apparently because we got a giant on SmackDown. The Big Show's gone to SmackDown. MVP to SmackDown. Tyson Kidd and David Hart Smith to Raw, even though they're unified tag champs and can go everywhere. Rosa Mendez to SmackDown. Hornswoggle to SmackDown, where apparently he's going to be making life hell for Dolph Ziggler, which totally sucks to be that guy. Goldust to Raw, which I guess is a way to feature him on the A-Show in preparation for his book that's going to be coming out sometime in the next year or two. Ezekiel Jackson is going to Raw, where he'll almost surely be lost in the shuffle. Chris Masters-Pex, drafted to SmackDown. Natalya is heading to Raw with her team. We've got Cody Rhodes, drafted to SmackDown. And hope things work out for Cody, but boy, did he look like a guy that was going to get lost in a shuffle on the show this past Friday night. Chavo Guerrero to SmackDown, and those are the results of the supplemental draft there. We've talked a little bit about the main drafts to Raw. Chris Jericho is going to Raw. Edge is going to Raw. Kelly is going to SmackDown, and there were several others as well. We'll talk more about that. And we'll start taking phone calls and emails at the top of the hour. So if you've got questions about pro wrestling and mixed martial arts, we'll be getting into those here on the air. Be back in just a moment. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Radio Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com. Joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. Talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts and a little bit of boxing today on the program. We're going to jump into the phone calls and emails after the top of the hour break. For right now, let's do a couple of these email questions right here. This person wants to know, Chris Jericho's future being drafted to Raw. Chris Jericho, this is actually the funniest thing about the entire draft, is he got drafted from SmackDown to Raw, and WWE.com interviewed him, and they said, Jericho, what are your thoughts on being drafted from SmackDown to Raw? And Jericho's response was somebody to the effect of, I spent most of the last year on Raw, SmackDown, and NXT, so what difference does it make? And that's largely the answer. He will still be on NXT. I'm sure things will happen that will bring him to SmackDown, and he will be featured heavily on Raw. I think the company realizes that as far as all-around performers, he's way up there with the best in the company, and may be the best. And so I think that he's going to be fine pretty much wherever he ends up. Any thoughts on that?
No, and they'll have no problem bouncing him around to, you know, whatever, too, if they need to. So, yeah, again, it's amazing to see the, even though it's amazing with so many cable outlets and everything that Sci-Fi is going to be the one that to have SmackDown, and even on such a, you know, really a powerhouse of a station, how much of a, not an afterthought, but it's going to certainly be the second place show on SmackDown is on Sci-Fi.
I actually want to talk about that after the break, because I have a lot of thoughts about the way that this is going down and the way that they're handling it, and I actually don't think that they are doing the best job with their idea of what to do with SmackDown. So we're going to talk about that after the top of the hour break. We're going to take some phone calls. We're going to take some emails. We have a lot of news to talk about still, including the Tito Jenna incident. A lot of TNA news, in fact, that we haven't got into, including the lowest rating of all time for the show. Jim Ross's future. We got a lot of stuff to talk about. That's coming up after the break. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live here on Sirius Channel 122 and Sports Byline USA. How's it going, everybody? Brian Alvarez here on Wrestling Observer Live, here for the next hour, talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts, joined as always by Mike Sempervivi of the Adam and Mike Big Audio Nightmare at WrestlingObserver.com. Here talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. We've talked about Mayweather and Mosley earlier in the show. We got a lot of stuff to cover here, including the Jim Ross situation, Tito and Jenna, TNA doing the lowest rating of all time. We'll take your phone calls and emails as well. And Mike, NXT this past Monday night, some dudes sold programs. We had some matches. This show has fallen off the cliff.
Yeah, you know, I was nervous about it anyway because concept shows scare me a little bit. You know, I fell into Tough Enough, I felt was good. But the idea of NXT just, I couldn't really grasp it, but I was hoping they'd sell me on it, and I just was done with it within 2 weeks. I guess they didn't really sell programs because Bryan Danielson gave them away.
You know what's funny about, I was just thinking about this when we were talking about the draft, and you were talking about how you still like the draft or the idea of it. I really would like the draft to work. I really would. And I think what's amazing about it is when I look at the concept of the draft and the concept of NXT, these are both in the concept of the brand split of all things, which has been going on now for nearly a decade. When I look at the concept of those three things, they're all great concepts. I mean, whoever came up with these ideas, these are really good ideas. You've got a draft, you've got separate brands where you've got certain people on each show, you build a fan base, every year you switch sides to freshen things up. Great idea. The draft. Guys go from Raw to SmackDown, the draft show, the big show of the year. Great idea. NXT, you've got rookies being mentored by pros, and a couple of the guys break through onto the main stage. Great idea. All three of them in execution failures. It's really amazing, actually.
Yeah,
I don't know what it is.
When you think about the fact that the brand splits, you know, you get a draft TV show out of the deal for USA. You can spark a rating, like, if you do it just quarterly and have them get together or something like that. You have it for the video game, which is one of the reasons they say they have that pay-per-view. You know, you have the weeks leading up to it where if you keep these guys apart except for those times, it does mean something, and it's a good idea. And what it could do is, as they're trying to change different pay-per-views as time goes on, if you made this serious and you ended it at some point with a War Games,
actually, hold on.
War Games, which they probably would, but you could pull this off at whatever that one was where they got the stinking trophy.
Actually, Mike, hold that thought. We're going to head to a break real quick. We'll talk about this when we come back because I got some ideas as well. We'll be right back. Wrestling Observer Live, Sports Byline Radio Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. Ran right up against a break last time. Sorry to cut you off there, Mike, but you were talking about ideas for the brand extension, so jump right back into it.
Well, yeah, sorry to get my role on there, but it amazes me with the fact that they do the brand split and they have, you know, the want to sell the video game, and you get some TV out of the deal, and just if you keep people apart, you're able to make those things more special and make it a bigger deal, and you could actually go and pull. I mean, War Games is the one thing WWE, with the exception of the name Starcade, there's very few things that have been out there that they haven't made their own yet, and I'm sure at some point they'd be salivating to do War Games, because you can do a whole bunch of 24/7 and DVD stuff around it, and if you treated this thing seriously every year, people can get into War Games. It's a pretty universal thing. It was one of Dusty Rhodes' best ideas. I think he was the one that came up with it, where it is a universal, easy thing that people can get behind, because if they know that 10 people hate each other and you can culminate some feuds and there's going to be violence, that they're going to be into it. Obviously, in this day's WWE, you can work your way around some of that violence, but they'll know it's going to be a big deal. And it's kind of frustrating the way they treat the brand split, because they don't have to have so much interplay, but that's been something a lot of people have been complaining about for a long, long time, and something Chris Jericho, like you said earlier on, has made fun of.
I just think about all of the ways, I think what frustrates me, and it frustrates me in TNA as well, I know I rant about TNA all the time, but it always, what makes me upset is easy things that get screwed up. And to me, the brand extension is so easy. You just don't let people go to the other show. I mean, it could not be easier. I mean, all you do is you pretend that Raw and SmackDown are separate shows. You would never see a WWE guy on TNA unless they left WWE. You would never see it. You would never even see them sitting in the audience. So, if you're going to do a brand extension, then the Raw guys stay on Raw, and the SmackDown guys stay on SmackDown. Every now and then, perhaps, some guy can do something on SmackDown, and let's say that Jeff Hardy was on Raw, and Matt Hardy was on SmackDown, if Jeff Hardy were still in WWE. And let's say that somebody, Drew McIntyre, beat up Matt Hardy, like he's done for 3 weeks now on SmackDown. Maybe Jeff Hardy on Raw one day is going to do a promo, and he's going to throw in a line about, you know, Drew McIntyre, I'm very upset about what you've done to my brother, blah, 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 whatever. And you get people thinking, huh, you know, maybe Jeff will get sent to SmackDown in the draft. And you get people thinking about some of these possibilities that could happen in this draft. You get people excited for it. And again, if you do this and you keep people separate, then when you do a draft, people actually care. And it actually does a big number, and people actually get excited about it. I look at our traffic on our website, and I can always tell what people are interested in and what they are not interested in. For example, WrestleMania is going to do the biggest buy rate of the year. Well, guess what? WrestleMania Sunday is our biggest day of the year. And I can look at, you know, the January 4th, when Raw and Impact went head-to-head for the first time. Huge day for us, because people were super interested in it. I watched the traffic for our site on Mondays now, and it's gradually going down to what it was before Impact was even on Mondays. And why? Well, you look at the rating. People don't care about Impact anymore. They cared a lot on January 4th, and it was reflected in our traffic. Now they don't care at all, which is reflected in our traffic. The draft show this year did about what every Monday does. There was no big spike. There was no big peak of interest as people came and were refreshing the front page to see who went where. Nobody really cared, because they screwed up the draft, the brand extension, and thus they've screwed up the draft. Just like NXT. This is such an easy concept. You're trying to get young guys over, so let young guys get some wins here and there. Instead, they want to get Daniel Bryan over, but they beat him on every single show. How's the guy supposed to get over? He's not going to. I mean, this is foresight being 2020. The guy ain't going to get over when you beat him on every show. Last week, they had Heath Slater beat Chris Jericho. Great! Then, of course, this week comes. Jericho just beats Heath Slater. Just to let everybody know, last week was a fluke. The guy's really not very good, and you shouldn't care about him. I mean, that's what upsets me about all three things. There are a lot of great ideas. You came up with the War Games idea. Fans could come up with a million different ideas. This is like the invasion 10 years ago. Fans had a million great ideas about what to do with the invasion, and WWE somehow managed to screw it up, and that's the most frustrating thing about the company.
And after so many examples of that throughout wrestling history, too, where it's just like, you know what, sometimes the guys doing it just really don't know more than the ones watching it. You know, sometimes we actually really know what we want to see. And, you know, that was a great example of that.
Let's go to the phones. You're on Wrestling Observer Live. Who is this and where are you calling from?
Hey, guys, it's Casey from Northern California. What's going on?
What's going on?
Hey, I was just watching some of the Portland wrestling from 2003. And I watched your match, Brian, with the Grappler and Moondog Moretti. And someone really caught my eye, and that was the Black Dragon. Who was that?
Oh, God, what the hell was his name? I forget his name, but I don't know what he's up to. I don't see his name around. What the hell was his name?
Was it Barry?
Brett Como, that's right, yeah, Brett Como. Yeah, I don't know what he's doing nowadays. I really haven't heard much from him, really. He was really good.
Yeah, he was, what, the Ring Around the Northwest 2002 Wrestler of the Year?
I don't know. He was, I think, one of the things, well, I mean, one of the reasons he didn't go farther in the U.S. is because he was a really small guy. I mean, he was even smaller than I was, and I'm absolutely not a giant. And he kind of, the Black Dragon and the Ultimo Dragon, the outfits that they wore, where they had like the mask and the shoulder pads and such, it made them look a lot wider and a lot bigger than they actually were. And I remember that when I saw Brett Como take off the Black Dragon shoulder Delia Bob, and I remember when I was backstage at a WWE show in the early part of 2000, and Ultimo Dragon was there, and he didn't have his stuff on, and I was shocked at how small they actually were without this stuff on, and I think that's really what held him back, because he was really good.
Now, you had those two matches that I discussed. Did you have any others in the restart of the Portland?
I had quite a few, actually. I had one with Adam Firestorm, which I think is on one of his... I think that's on YouTube somewhere. I'm sure it's on one of his comps. I did a bunch of stuff with... I forget who it was. I had a bunch of different matches there, probably about 6 months before the whole thing just went under.
And you were now... Where was Brian Danielson? When were you guys on the same show, or at least in the credits?
There were a couple of the early Portland wrestling shows that he was on the card.
Oh, yeah.
It was only like a couple of shows, and I don't know. It was like he didn't get to wrestle like Brian Danielson. He had to wrestle like your average Northwest guy doing the high spots and that sort of thing, the tackle drop down, hip toss, the real basic stuff, and didn't really stand out as a result. And he was only in for a couple of shows, and that was that.
Yeah, he was on the first couple. He was in a tag match, and the first match I saw was he was teaming with Adam Firestorm against Dr. Luther and the Black Dragon.
I remember I wrestled Dr. Luther, and he gave me the hardest enziguri I've ever had in my entire life.
Dr. Luther's amazing. He had a really fun career, you know, whether it was in Canada or in the Northwest, as well as FMW. That guy, I don't know, he doesn't get enough praise. Lenny St. Clair does not get enough praise.
Well, actually, if you listen to Jericho, I mean, he really praises Lenny as being a guy that he should have gone a hell of a lot farther than he did, and I think he just said that, you know, he let his I don't know if he said his weight or what exactly he said, but he always talked about it, and Lenny was a great promo, but like I said, I mean, he kicked me really hard. I mean, he'd apologize today, and I don't think he did it on purpose, but. God, I will never forget that enziguri. It's like the only thing I remember, and I don't even know how I remember because he hit me so damn hard in the head. But anyway, the good old days of Portland wrestling, the restart down there under Frank Culbertson, and it lasted a while. It was a lot of fun, and then like a lot of promotions, it just all fell apart. So anyway, we'll talk. We'll take more phone calls, more emails, talk more news after the break. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Radio Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. Here for the next 40 minutes, talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts, taking your phone calls and emails, talking news. Let's do some of the emails right here. We've got a whole bunch of them. This person wants to know, any thoughts on doing a three-dimensional pay-per-view? This is for WWE. With the technology becoming more and more widespread in movies and sporting events, are WWE looking to follow the trend, and do you think they should? I haven't heard of them talking about it. They're going to be having the quarterly investors call coming up in a few days, and perhaps somebody will ask about it, but they've got a lot of other projects that are much higher on the priority scale at this point, I'm sure, than 3D pay-per-views. But somebody that formerly worked for WWE that still follows the product and is a big fan of UFC said that UFC needed to jump into the three-dimensional pay-per-view bandwagon. And thing is, I don't know how long 3D is going to be a big deal. You know what I mean? It's like there was a time, obviously, in the 50s where 3D was huge for a while and then it fell off. And I don't know if this is like the beginning of the new wave of watching movies and TV is in 3D, or if this is just another sort of short-lived fad that ends up fading out. So I don't know. If it becomes significantly bigger, I'm sure they'll think about it. But right now, I really haven't heard anything about it.
Yeah, I think they're going to be pushed into it. I think all three sports are going to be pushed into it by pay-per-view and things like that if it continues to hold on. But WWE on its own doing it, I'm sure that there's guys there who keep up with that sort of stuff, obviously, for as good as their production is. But with that said, they were very slow to get into HD because of wanting to figure out camera angles and sounds and things like that. So it's a lot of money to spend. I mean, my Comcast affiliate here offered up the Masters in 3D, and, you know, I just kind of asked myself the question, who's got one of these TVs already?
Yeah. This person says, with Desmond Wolf winning the fan voting in TNA, do you think they'll abide by the results or find some way to get around him? I don't think they hate Wolf, and he's been in a prominent position on TV, but it's clear they wanted somebody like Styles or Rob Terry to win. Yeah, TNA is doing a fan voting.
So stupid. You know, I'm sorry. It just kills me when they do. Why does a company wants to work everything else and say it's smarter than the fans? Why don't they just rig these stinking polls? If they're actually, it's like what happened in Mexico with the mask and all that sort of stuff, too. I mean, for Christ's sakes, why do they do this?
Well, they wanted a revolutionary, it's a revolutionary ranking system. And I'll actually explain how it works according to TNA. What they do is they're having a poll, which, by the way, isn't even on TNAWrestling.com. You're taken to an outside link for like pollmaster.com or something like that, which actually sounds like a porn site of some sort. But you go there. You're allowed to cast as many votes as you want. So, of course, people are stuffing the ballot box. As noted, Desmond Wolf is in first place. And I'm going to be fascinated to see how they cover this on TV. Because are they really going to go in there and show on television that Desmond Wolf is in first place with God knows how many votes and Abyss is in last place with like 3%? Let's actually go to the TNA website right now and do a little bit of investigation. I always like doing this stuff live here on the air.
Well, you know, and worst comes to worst, too. Maybe they could always, right before the match, have Desmond get run down in a white Hummer or some sort of stupidity like that.
Sure. All right, let's see here. TNAWrestling.com. First off, let's find out if this poll is even easy to access. And, of course, it's not. Where in the hell is this poll at? Oh, here we go. New. Top 10 contenders. Let's see. Vote now. Click here to cast your vote. All right. Who deserves a shot at the TNA World Heavyweight title? And by the way, you can embed this poll on your web. Poll Daddy. PollDaddy.com.
Poll Daddy.
Which does, in fact, sound like a porn site. All right. We've got Kurt Angle, Jeff Hardy, Mr. Anderson, The Pope. And by the way, Kurt Angle is supposed to be off TV, so that's a good one to put in there. Sting, Jeff Jarrett, Abyss, Rob Terry, Desmond Wolf, and AJ Styles. Let's vote for Desmond like everybody else. All right, here are the results as of this afternoon. Kurt Angle has got 4% of the vote. Jeff Hardy has got 29% of the vote. He's in second place, 115,000 votes. So the Hardy Army, I'm sure, is in full effect trying to beat the Desmond Wolfomaniacs. Desmond is in first place currently, 119,000 votes, 30%. Mr. Anderson has got 10%. The Pope has got 6. Sting has got 6. Jeff Jarrett has got 2. Abyss has got 2. 6,000 votes for Abyss. Rob Terry has got 6% of the vote. AJ Styles has only got 5% of the vote, 21,000 votes. So people are messing around. I, like I said, cannot wait to see if they actually put this poll on television. Because if they do, they are completely, completely out of their minds. Because all they would be doing is either telling the world that this contest is a farce, or telling the world that the guys we've been pushing are not over at all to you people, but the guys like Desmond Wolf are. And I don't know, are you going to push Desmond Wolf all the way? Probably not. The rules are apparently that they're going to take into account what the fans think, and then I guess Dixie Carter, Hulk Hogan, and Eric Bischoff are going to sit down. They're going to cast their vote, and then they're going to take into account win-loss records. Shouldn't wins and losses matter the most, for God's sake?
Why would they?
It's like,
why now would they? And really, frankly, so what if they put it on the TV show every week? It dropped to 739,000 viewers, so, I mean, really, who's going to know anyway?
Let's talk more about TNA in a moment. Let's go to the phones. You're on Wrestling Observer Live. Who is this and where are you calling from?
Hello, Brian. It's Noah. I want my apology.
We'll talk to you on Tuesday. Back to TNA. The poll here, wins and losses, as Lance Storm actually noted before they announced that they were taking into account these as part of the overall deal with Dixie and Hogan and Bischoff. I mean, he noted that shouldn't wins and losses matter the most? And as noted, can you imagine if UFC went in there and said the number one contender to the heavyweight title is going to be Kimbo Slice, based on a poll at UFC.com. It would never
it's
happen.
It's the opposite of Bryan Danielson on Next.
It is. It's exactly the opposite.
Yes, and that's, you know, it's, and again, it makes no sense when you flip the coin. It's dumb. And because if you're going to do that and have that popularity contest, why isn't it just 5 guys? I mean, Ring of Honor's got at least the newest kind of thing, even though that's kind of goofy too, at least you can, it makes a little bit more sense. I mean, it's just dumb.
Yeah, NXT,
especially when you allow unlimited voting and all that nonsense too. It's just, you put the why a guy's a contender in the story. Like, you were putting too many of them in the story before, now you're going this direction. Just have dudes wrestle.
I can't even figure out why they're on PollDaddy.com, because the TNA website itself has a poll feature where you may be only able to, in fact, let me find out if you can only vote once. Why would you not just do this on your own website and allow people to vote one time and run a real poll? Why would you do a thing like this where you can stuff the ballot box? Is it not patently obvious what's going to happen? Let's look at their poll they've got here.
So they could say, so they could say that 9 trillion people participated in the poll.
Oh, yeah. All right, what is your favorite match on Impact? I think all of these matches pretty much sucked. Kazarian and Shannon Moore, I guess, was the best one. Let me vote. All right. Yep, there you go. AJ Styles versus Jared and Hardy is in the lead with 39. And by the way, look at this poll on TNAWrestling.com. Number of voters, they've got 10,000 votes in total. Total! You go to PollDaddy.com, and, you know, there are guys that have 3 times that amount of votes,
yeah,
and a number of them.
If you're going to stuff the box, you might as well draw them to your site.
Yeah. All right, now let me go back and see if you can vote a second time on the TNA page. Let me vote for a different one. Oh, I guess you can stuff this ballot box as well. It's just that nobody cares.
There you go, 10,000.
Oh, my God. Well, there you go, everybody. Yes, TNA did its lowest rating of all time on Monday, a 0.5. And as it turns out, the Thursday replay actually did a better number.
You can say the Boston-Miami game 7, did something to it. Obviously, the 3-hour Raw has got a little something to do with it, but that's just straight apathy, which, if nothing else, it's apathy every other week for the tape show. Now, whether that really matters or not, you know, hey, but still, you can't even blame it on anything else other than just general apathy.
Yeah,
for
and of course,
to be that low, especially in their wheelhouse of their usual demo, for it to be in that wheelhouse and fail, it just was what it was.
And, of course, the question is, when do they just give up and move back to Thursdays? And the answer, I mean, there's nothing official, but one would think that within the next couple of weeks, you would have to make that decision because this is an embarrassing number on Monday nights. And granted, they went up against the draft, but the draft only did a 3-1 rating. It did I don't have the numbers in front of me. It was like a 2-6, 2-7 in hour one, because of course everybody forgot it started an hour earlier because nobody cares about the draft. And the second hour did a 3-3. So it's not like Raw did like a 5, and that's why TNA did a 0.5. I mean, Raw did not do a very good number, and TNA still did a 0.5. This wrestling war, maybe it's hurting WWE a little, but by a little, I mean by a tenth. I don't even think it would be any more than that. It's absolutely destroying TNA. And, I mean,
it's hurting Spike. And it's going to, and down the line, it's really going to hurt Spike. It's going to stick out more and more, too, because we used to make fun of the fact that they always drew a 1 or a 1.1. It was, like, amazing how those people would stick through thick and thin and stay on that show. They were the TV watchers that equated to the people inside the Impact Zone who pop for everything that they're supposed to, and they're that great and that loyal to that company. They have got to get that other 0.5 back.
Yeah,
just hovering around here is absolutely ridiculous, and ridiculous for their overall number. When they can put on, if nothing else, their own cheaper, you know, original programming and more UFC taped stuff and get higher ratings than that. I mean,
actually,
you know,
hold that thought. We're going to head to a break. We'll be back in just a moment to continue this. Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Radio Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. For the latest news and information in pro wrestling and mixed martial arts, always head to WrestlingObserver.com. Daily news updates, we've got weekly newsletters, and of course, all of the audio, more audio than you could possibly listen to. In fact, I had a guy email a while ago and say that he went through and listened to every single show that we'd ever recorded in his spare time, and I think he said it took him over a year. Actually, read that shout out in a couple of days. But if you love audio and you're only listening to the show once a week and you love it, head to WrestlingObserver.com, scroll down the right hand side of the page. There's a list of our latest 5 free radio shows. Download them, listen to them, and if you love them, consider signing up. We do 15 to 20 shows a week on the website.
Yeah, there's 20. I listen to my shows if you're a member, and anybody can get the free iPod app. But if you're a member, you get to listen to all the radio shows on there. I think it was 20 shows since last Sunday.
20 shows since last Sunday, everybody. So if you've got an MP3 player, iPod, you got a long commute, you hate working out on the treadmill without something to listen to, WrestlingObserver.com is a place to go. We were talking about the 0.5 rating of TNA, and go ahead and continue.
No, it's just that they have got to get that other 5 back. They go back to Thursday and just concentrate on what, you know, and trying to build this thing back up again. I mean, it's just the level of apathy that they have created is mind-numbing. And again, I know you wanted to give Russo time and get everything and see how it's gelling together and the whole 9 yards there, but they have been so inconsistent, you know, back and forth, you know, a little bit up and then way down, and it's just everything every week. It's tough for people to watch, which is why, I mean, a 0.5, 739,000 people, for whatever reason it is, that's just, you have got to go and retool, and you have got to make a move. Now, this is going into month 5. We're in month 5 of what's supposed to be the new regime. I'm not sure how much time they wanted to give, but they have got to stop now.
Back to the phones. You're on Observer Live. Who is this and where are you calling from?
This is Chris from Las Vegas.
Chris, what's happening?
Well, I just heard you guys talking, and I wasn't going to breach on this topic, but the 0.5, and I remember, you know, they talked about when they were doing WCW and they wanted to rebrand and rebuild, and they said it's going to take time, and now you guys are saying stop now, move now, even though it was an 0.5, which was weird because they were going up against the draft, and it was such a drop from last week, and moving that faster... I don't know. You think it was just a one-week thing and we'll know this week?
Well, I mean, okay, here are the two things. Number one, if they'd been consistently doing a 1-1 on Monday and the draft show did like a 5 and they dropped to a 0.5, that would be fine. Then you could say, okay, well, you know, it was a draft. That's too bad. The draft did a 3-1 rating. I mean, it didn't even do a good number. And
right.
TNA still dropped to a 0.5. And this is a consistent week-by-week drop of the audience. I mean, if it were staying steady and it was slowly moving up, or even if it were just staying steady, then you could
Weren't they up last week?
They went from they were up slightly to a 1, yes.
Yeah.
But still, being up slightly to a 1 when you were doing a 1-1 to a 1-2 on Thursdays, they're not growing. They're still below what they were doing on Thursday nights, and they had a huge drop this week. And I guess you can wait and see what this week does and next week does, but they're slowly eroding their audience, and they need to stop doing that immediately.
And here's the thing, too. They don't – I mean, I'm not talking about – I mean, obviously a writing change is probably in order at this point when you look at the past 5 months, but little things like the women's division sucks. Whatever problem you have with Dutch Mantel, can't you have him come back in and say, don't talk to anybody else except for these girls, set this up. Did make little changes, and even doing that would make some sense just because it's such a jumble every week. Last week's show, yeah, that was pretty good. But still,
it was an awesome show. They can't do that every week, but it was an awesome show. And I hate to get you started, Brian, but I've been saying it for years. Why is Vince Russo still there? And I've heard you rant about it several times. But the other point of my call was Monday, I was watching it, and I was like, they're really going to do Edge and Randy Orton as babyface? Are they trying to make me turn the television set? Are they trying to make me fast forward, give up on wrestling completely, because Randy Orton is just completely boring? And, I can't believe they're going to go do this.
We actually talked about this earlier, the idea that... So they're going to do Edge and Randy Orton is going to be the babyface, and Edge is going to be the heel. That is as completely backwards as you can possibly book something.
Well, I prefer Edge as a heel, too, but I'd rather he would be the babyface in this situation than anything.
Yes. Fully
the
agree.
The only thing that could happen is the twist being that Randy Orton becomes Stone Cold Steve Austin with a head injury where, okay, he's the shade of gray with all these other really worse guys around him, and you do that, but they... I don't think he's going to be able to pull it off. He hasn't been so far, although I'm not sure exactly what they want him to do, because
I don't think they have a clear direction of what they want him to do yet. They turned him, but I don't think they've even decided that they really... Well, Randy hasn't decided that either.
Well, no.
Yeah, exactly.
I think Randy I want to thank you very much for the call. I think Randy very clearly hates being a babyface, and that's part of the problem. I mean, you have to enjoy what you're doing, and he doesn't, and it comes across in his work, and that's the last thing we need.
And that's why he's got to be Austin-esque, and I don't know if he'll pull that off or if they'll let him.
I want to talk about some news here very quickly, then we'll go back to the phones. Tara has quit TNA. She just pretty much flat out said she was unhappy there. She asked for a raise. They didn't give it to her. And by raise, I mean it was probably very, very small, maybe a couple $100 a show, and they wouldn't give it to her. And so she is gone. And I guess since Angelina Love got hurt in their last angle and is going to be back for a month, I presume that's the end of Tara in the company, because there's no need to put her on the next couple of shows.
Yeah, it's, you know, she's been filling in for Daphne and Angelina on the road, and she's kind of busted up right now, too. But, you know, she really took a shot at TNA, and, you know, one of the people that was frustrated there and saying, smearing me on the way out the door is a sign of a second-rate character, so I can't see them bringing her back for anything after those comments, much less now that Angelina's out. But, you know, so Dutch Mantel went out, Tara is now out, and she hasn't been great, but then again, you know, it's TNA. Awesome Kong, gone because she wanted a raise. Ayako, they haven't used it at all. Sarita and Taylor Wilde, who people actually liked in the Impact Zone, haven't been around. It's just, so you have the beautiful people, ODB and Daphne, right? That's
basically
what's left? Why are they even doing this then?
I have absolutely no idea.
So, yeah, it's just, again, you know, have somebody just come in and work with them. I don't, again, it's where the simple things are made far, far too difficult.
Back to the phones. You're on Observer Live. Who is this and where are you calling from?
Hi, this is Mark from London, England.
Mark, what's going on?
Not too much. Question, it's like a personal opinion, really. Who do you think, mainly kind of for SmackDown, because SmackDown's kind of the better show to watch, and it's interesting with SmackDown because they've kind of got all the kind of up-and-comers now. Who do you think should kind of really kind of excel in the next kind of 6 to 12 months?
God, I'd have to look at that whole roster. I think Punk is obviously going to be way up there. If they do something with Jack Swagger and don't bury him, I think he's going to do very well. And I think that him being the centerpiece of the show, I think it can work. It depends on if he's got a lot of good babyface challengers, which that's the big problem with the brand is they've got Show, Undertaker, and Ray. And Christian. Ray is iffy because he needs surgery. Big Show is Big Show. And Undertaker's, you know, he's taking time off right now. So they need more babyfaces. I don't know if they'll elevate MVP.
You have Christian, though, too, who can at least fill
that's
a void
true.
On a pay-per-view and get a great match.
That's
or at
true.
Least a very good one.
And Christian and Swagger actually would be a lot of fun.
That's the other thing as well with Ray, because wasn't his ACL supposed to just completely be shot? I remember the Conan show from ages ago, and he's still been wrestling since. Wasn't he supposed to have surgery ages ago, and he's still not had it?
Yeah, he's put it off many times. He's another guy that I think he knows his days are numbered due to all of his injuries, and he's trying to make as much money as he can. It was WrestleMania season. Obviously, that's the biggest payday of all. He's got a thing with Punk now that's fun. So, yeah, I mean, he's sticking around, but at some point he's going to have to get it done. And you just never know when you've had all the injuries and surgeries he has if this will be the one you just can't come back from.
No, it didn't do Kevin Nash any harm.
That's true, but Kevin Nash also got away with doing a lot of standing.
This is true.
Well, I want to thank you very much for the call. We've got to jump into some other news here before we wrap it up. Tito and Jenna had I don't know what they had, but the police were called. Tito was taken in. Jenna had bruising on her arm. She ended up going and getting an arm brace on, and then she went to Vegas with her friends. She said Tito hit her. Then she later said that he didn't hit her. He called a press conference, said she had an OxyContin addiction. Then he later said she didn't have an addiction. He just found two pills. He thought she'd started something again. She said they were old pills. Now they're trying to work it out and get back together. This whole thing is just a mess.
It seems to be for the people that care about these sort of things. If you're a woman or a TMZ reader or something like that, you're kind of on Team Jenna. But if you're, people in the fight game and people I've talked to and stuff like that tend to believe Tito's side, and it's just two messes in a mess. Unfortunately, they have kids right now because they're acting like complete fools. And, you know, Dave pointed it out on this show, and other people who were parents all kind of thought the same thing that I've talked to. And that's, you know, if, you know, you have a situation like this, you drop your kids off and then go run to Vegas. The fact that the stories have changed back and forth and all of this other stuff, it's, you know, Jenna putting up a test saying she's clean, although, you know, she's being blamed to use OxyContin, which is out of your system rather easily, and it's just a big old, big TMZ mess.
And, of course, Jim Ross, Friday was his final day as a talent for WWE. He noted that his contract just quietly expired. There was not a big announcement by WWE. They did not offer him a new deal, not even a short-term deal. His contract expired. Maybe they'll claim, like they did with The Rock, that it was a clerical error. Remember that?
Or like what happened with him and Jeff Jarrett, and he took the blame for that.
That's right. So he is done as a talent with WWE. He will not be doing commentary anytime in the near future, although you never say never. I think everybody knows that in wrestling. You just don't. But for now, he's doing payroll with WWE. He's still working for them. I mean, he's not done with the company, but he is done as a talent. And we did a poll on WrestlingObserver.com. Do you think it was a bad idea to take Jim Ross off commentary? And I think it was like 95% yes, it was a bad idea, which was just an absurdly one-sided poll. But WWE is on a youth kick. That's the deal. And stupid. Unfortunately, Jim Ross is not a youth.
Yeah, just so incredibly stupid on so many incredible levels. But I guess he's going to be, I don't know if he'll be loosely associated, although at least do some 24/7 stuff and add expertise that way. But just so incredibly, remarkably dumb, especially when you had to hear Michael Cole, Jerry Lawler, and Matt Stryker all together on Monday night. But also, if it's something too, Strikeforce, it's amazing how they're foolish they are business-wise to not come out and say that Jason Mayhem Miller, and to try to spin the story that he's a hero to Strikeforce and their fans, and to try to defend him a little bit from the Tennessee Commission, because they're setting up this show for June 16th, and they want him to fight Robbie Lawler. And the fact that Mayhem, the fact that Jake Shields screwed you, it is now more than screw you, but he took advantage of you guys failing to give him a contract, and he's sitting there with Dana White, considering that, Nate Diaz, who's a UFC fighter, you just had Gilbert Melendez fight, so if he gets suspended for 90 days, it's not that big of a deal to you, really, compared to some other things. And you have Nick Diaz, who you can just add into the story being a loose cannon. I would try to put some of the pressure on those guys and defend Mayhem Miller, because at least he's going to be there for you in June on a show that they're really going to need, I would assume, although I guess it's going to be on Showtime during the week, or it's very bizarre. It's a Wednesday night show at the Nokia Theater.
Actually, hold that thought. We'll talk about that right when we get back. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Radio Network. We are back here for the final segment on Wrestling Observer Live. Mike, you were talking about the show coming up at the Nokia Theater. Go to town.
Yeah, these people have me ranting today. But, no, Strikeforce announced the show. It's going to take place midweek, Wednesday, June 16th, at the Nokia Theater in Hollywood. They'll feature Bobby Lashley, Robbie Lawler, and KJ Nunes all involved in bouts. And it looked like it was going to be Lawler and Mayhem Miller, although I guess they're holding off on announcing that because they're not sure if Mayhem's going to be suspended by Tennessee. And they're just kind of pending there, considering that they could really use that fight. I think they would be, really putting more of the blame on Shields now that he's in the UFC, or at least trying and going out there and attempting to. And maybe for their sake, that's what they're trying to do. But I would be a little bit more proactive about right now, because you need to fill up that card. I mean, it's May 2nd or whatever day it is today. Yeah, May 2nd. And you have a show coming up with Overeem and Rogers with an undercard that's not filled out either. So, as far as the matchmaking side of things go, I'm surprised they haven't figured some things out a little bit better than this.
Tomorrow, of course, is Raw versus Impact for perhaps one of the last times on Monday night. Raw, of course, is a live show, the post-draft edition of Raw. Impact is live as well. They'll be taping a show on Tuesday night. So we'll see what the direction is leading up to the next pay-per-view. WWE, of course, is going to be setting up the Over the Limit show, which is coming up in a couple of weeks. Next week, of course, we'll talk about that. We'll talk more about the upcoming Quinton Jackson Rashad Evans show, and we'll have a review of Saturday night's UFC, so you can look forward to that. Always check out WrestlingObserver.com for more. As noted, tons of news, daily news updates, newsletters, and a lot of radio shows. Free ones up there as well. Scroll down the right-hand side of the page, check out those free shows, and if you love it, sign up. Next week, back on the show. Want to thank you very much for doing the show today, Mike. Want to thanks everybody for listening. Thank everybody for calling in and sending your emails. Sorry if we didn't get to your email. We'll try to get to more of them next week, but we just simply ran out of time here. But that is it. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live on Sirius Satellite Radio, Channel 122, and the Sports Byline Radio Network.